We've got Tom Jensen on the line right now from Public Policy Polling, based out of Raleigh. PublicPolicyPolling.com is their website to help us break down all of the interesting races here locally in Orange County and across the state as we start getting into primary season officially. Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron. Good to be with you.
So what I just gave was the 30-second summary of everything on the ballot, starting locally, actually starting statewide, first of all. We've got a whole bunch of potentially interesting races. It got a couple of very high-profile legislators trying to make a return to the state House and state Senate. You've got the Dwayne Hall situation in Raleigh, where a Democrat who was looking presumably to cruise to re-election is now facing serious calls to resign from his own party over sexual harassment allegations, and all of that is just kind of the tip of the iceberg. So what are we seeing statewide in terms of what we can expect for May and then the general election beyond that?
Well, I think what's really interesting, and it sort of shows the power of unintended consequences, this year, all of our judicial elections, which are the main statewide elections, are going to be partisan elections. And the Republicans made the judicial elections partisan because they thought that having nonpartisan elections was keeping as many Republican judges from getting elected. And they may be right about that, but all of a sudden, the first election where we're going to be partisan for both Supreme Court and Court of Appeals, and those things lead the ticket, comes in what's likely to be an extremely strong Democratic year, where having those partisan ties on the ballot is most likely going to help the Democrats, whereas if the races had continued to be nonpartisan, maybe some of the Republican candidates would have been able to hold on. And it's sort of funny that that happened, especially because the Democrats changed them 10, 12 years ago from being partisan to nonpartisan because they thought they were losing because of them being partisan. And then all of a sudden, 2006, 2008 were hugely Democratic years. The Democrats actually would have been better off if they just kept them partisan. So it's funny how this is an example of the party sort of messing around with the rules to try to help themselves. And it probably, in both cases, is going to end up backfiring on them. I think that it'll definitely in this political climate be to Democrats' advantage to have partisan labels on all those top-of-the-ticket judicial races.
What about the state House and state Senate races? What can we expect there?
Well, I think the main thing that's interesting to think about is just how wide the playing field is. We are accustomed to, at the start of a year, maybe getting hired to poll 10 or 15 legislative races to figure out what the big races in the state are going to be, sort of what the lay of the land might be. We got hired to poll 46 districts this year before filing started, to sort of see what was competitive and what wasn't competitive. And out of those 46 districts, almost all of them did look like they had some potential to be competitive. So I think the biggest takeaway, and this also goes along with your point that every race has both a Democrat and a Republican in it, I think we're just going to have a much wider playing field than we're accustomed to having. It's not going to be something where there's only five or six races that come to election day and you're not sure what's going to happen. I think there's going to be a lot more races this time around where, really both sides have a chance to win. And I do think, Democrats will probably make pretty decent gains, probably enough to break the supermajority, at least in the House. But it'll be interesting to see just the total extent of what that is. And just sort of an update on something that I feel like we've been talking about periodically throughout the last 14 months. The reason I'm sort of so self-assured when I talk about this being a strong Democratic year isn't just based on the polling, but also is based on what we see happening in specific elections across the country. Tuesday night, there were three legislative special elections across the country. They were all seats that had been held by Republicans, and Democrats flipped two out of three of those seats that had elections on Tuesday night. They picked up a state legislative seat in Connecticut. They picked up a state legislative seat in New Hampshire. So the polling is good for Democrats, but then we also see all this sort of real-world evidence and actual elections occurring that this is going to be a real strong year for Democrats as well.
Are there particular districts, state House, state Senate, that you're really sort of keying in on as potentially kind of flippable either direction?
There's really a lot of them. I think especially in Wake County and Mecklenburg County, there's some really good opportunities for Democrats to pick up seats. I mean, one thing I'm particularly interested sort of to watch for in Wake County this year is I think it's possible that the Republicans could get totally wiped out of having any legislative seats in Wake County after this election. There's not a single legislative seat I look at in Wake County and say, oh, you know, the Republicans will definitely be safe there. So I think that is a really interesting dynamic to look at, is the extent to which, you know, Republicans potentially could entirely lose the suburbs as we sort of see this realignment where Republicans have made a lot of big gains in rural areas in recent years. Democrats haven't made big enough gains in suburban areas to make up for what they've lost in rural areas. But I do think that there's a pretty decent chance this year that Democrats are going to sort of get a lock on a lot more of those suburban seats than they have. And it's going to be interesting to see what Republicans have left in sort of the outlying areas of Wake County and Mecklenburg County, where they've traditionally done pretty well. Another set of districts that I'm really interested in is sort of what I call the 15-5-5 districts. When we went in and did all these polls recently, what we found was that there were a lot of districts where Donald Trump won the district by 15 points, but the Democratic candidate for the legislature for this year was only down by 5. And then when you narrowed it down only to the voters who were the most excited, the Democrat was actually up by 5. So these are, you know, districts where traditionally you wouldn't think that they would have any chance of being competitive or that Democrats would have any chance of winning. And they're sort of in the ballpark, especially if this enthusiasm advantage that Democrats have really manifests itself at the polls. And when I talk about these kinds of seats, two counties where these sorts of opportunities are coming into play that are particularly interesting to me are Alamance County and Cabarrus County. Those are places that sort of traditionally you think of as they're just going to be very solidly Republican. Democrats can't even think about winning in those places. But what we're starting to see with this sort of Democratic improvement in suburban areas of North Carolina is that Democrats are starting to be more competitive in the next county out from these major urban areas as well. So yes, Democrats are doing really well in Mecklenburg County, but that gives they're now starting to even have more chances in Cabarrus County. Yes, Democrats are doing really well in Guilford County, but now they might even have chances in Alamance County, that kind of thing. So those are some of the districts that I'm most interested in seeing how the races in them unfold over the course of this year.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, publicpolicypolling.com is their website. Go there and get more numbers statewide and nationally. So let's turn to Orange County in particular, and I actually want to stay with the state house. Typically, we almost never see sort of competitive partisan races in Orange County, and sort of looking at the Board of County Commissioners races and all of the other races just within the county, it's all Democrats running there, so kind of par for the course from previous years. But you've got District 50 in the State House, which covers northern Orange County, which is more rural, Caswell County, which is more rural, and you got Greg Meyer, who is a really outspoken Democrat who holds that seat and is running for re-election. You've got a candidate in Kenneth Rothrock who's not really, doesn't have that long of a resume in terms of political office, but he's running as a Republican. They'll face each other in the general election. With the district redrawn the way that it is, do you see that one in particular being more competitive?
It's the kind of district that if we were in 2010 or we were in 1994, where it was a strong Republican wave year, it's the kind of district I could see potentially getting onto the competitive list. But it's the sort of district that in a normal year is not going to be competitive. And of course, this is not a normal year. It's a even, you know, more strongly Democratic year than that. So I think that Greg Meyer will win pretty easily. I think the other thing Greg Meyer has going for him is that just about nobody works as hard as he does. Mm-hmm. So even with new areas within that district, I'm pretty sure he'll get out there and people get to know him and he'll do pretty well. But Greg Meyer certainly, I think, is the most important legislator in Orange County when we think about it. And that's because he's played such a big role in the Democratic efforts across the state. Because he's in a relatively safe district, he's been able to get really involved in helping candidates in other areas run and figure out how to be successful and that kind of thing. So I think when we're talking about winners and losers on the day after the election this fall, I think Greg's going to be a winner, not just because he wins his own reelection, which I'm pretty confident of, but I think that he'll be one of the people who really deserves some of the credit for the gains I think that Democrats are going to end up making this year.
So how about specifically Orange County races, Board of County Commissioners? I mentioned the sheriff's race and the Superior Court clerk's race, which is the oddly high-profile one this year in the same way that Register of Deeds was 4 years ago. What are you focusing on there in terms of races to watch?
Well, what I think is really interesting when it comes to local races is that even folks who, you know, people like you and me and probably most of the folks listening to WCHL think of as being like really well-known people among local elected officials, they tend not to be very well-known.
Mm-hmm.
So even somebody like Sally Green running for county commissioner, who's been on town council in Chapel Hill for 13 years, she's still not even going to have 50% name recognition on a countywide basis. And I think it's the same thing for, you know, her opponents, obviously, too, but same sort of dynamic in that, you know, clerk of court race. All of these folks aren't very well known. And my point in sort of talking about that is just how important it is for the people who want to win to go out and campaign really hard and run really strong campaigns, because there's not that much that's sort of just baked in from the outset the way that there is in a partisan race. So I know, like, you know, a lot of people would probably look at that at-large commissioner's race and say, oh, Sally Green's by far the best known person here, so this is going to be easy for her. But it's not something she can take for granted, and I don't think she will take it for granted either. But it was really interesting when we did this big poll. It's hard to believe it's been 5 years now. When Ellie Kinnaird stepped down, we basically polled on every major political figure in the county to see how people felt about them as a possible replacement for Ellie Kinnaird, and almost nobody hit even 50% name recognition among the local elected officials that we polled on. So for the most part, folks in local office aren't that well known, and that just means, again, they can't take anything for granted when they run for something. They're going to have to work real hard to sort of get on voters' radar screens.
Speaking with Tom Jensen again, publicpolicypolling.com is the website. And before we wrap up, just sort of a general question, and this is potentially going to affect races in Orange County, but also statewide and across the country. Taking a look at the numbers that you're seeing from surveys, but also, as you mentioned, the results coming in from special elections that are already happening, how important are demographics going to be in this election? This is a year when, and especially from the Me Too movement last year, which is continuing and strengthening, we're a lot more aware now than we were before of the extent to which women's voices are silenced and need to be amplified, and the extent to which African-American representation still isn't where it needs to be. How important is that going to be as a factor in terms of, especially in these local races where you've got maybe 8 candidates for school board and people having a hard time distinguishing or identifying one name or the over the other? How important are those factors going to be in determining who wins, who loses?
Well, one thing from a demographic perspective I'm particularly interested to see this year is whether young voters turn out at a higher rate than they usually do in midterm elections, because the trend has sort of been that even though midterm election turnout generally isn't that good, it's really horrific among young people. And seniors, who are much more conservative, end up comprising a much larger portion of the electorate. And that's a big piece of why Republicans did so well in midterms in 2010 and 2014. So I think that'll be one big interesting piece, is to see whether young people can get engaged. And then the other piece of it is, especially in North Carolina, we've definitely seen that African-American turnout is much higher as a percentage of the electorate in presidential years than it is in midterm years. And a lot of the districts that Democrats are hoping to sort of win back from what I would think of as more ancestral Democratic territory, as opposed to these sort of new emerging Democratic territories, places in like rural eastern North Carolina, where Democrats used to have everything and have lost it recently. We know Democrats aren't getting the white vote back in those areas. They might be able to sort of cut some of their losses from the last two elections, but they're not going to win it. So that means that to win in places like that, African-American turnout is very important to Democratic hopes. And I think if Democrats want to be a really statewide party and not just be able to win seats in the urban areas. Black turnout's going to be a big, huge, a big piece of the puzzle for whether Democrats can sort of win back some of these rural legislative seats that they've lost in recent cycles.
Get more information online at publicpolicypolling.com, PPP Polls on Twitter. Check them out there, too. Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.